Hello again from the Valley in Burbank, Adobe Studios. This is Waldman's Words, our second interview of the year with Nick Mishko of 10 and 8 Management, Boomtown Crooks, Candy Hearts, Film Speed, and Mirror Eyes. All wish you a happy new year, along with Alex Arias, Dave Dominguez, Kim Shattuck, and Stephen Briggs. This year, I really, really tried to bring a focus. Obviously, we're going to still have artists on the air, but I'm booked till mid to late March, and I really wanted it to be mostly people behind the scenes. So we had Zach Seppin from High Road Touring on last week. Today, Nick Mishko. Next week, where we're filming in February, recording in February, I'm so used to being LA filming, Jamie Savrai of A Loss for an Innocent. He does a lot of nonprofit work, followed the Warped Tour around, and I met him in person, and I don't know if I've ever met a more genuine guy who works really hard for a good cause. We'll talk all about that. It's going to be a different interview because he's really not in music, but he aligns himself with a lot of musicians. So kind of write, like to write Love in Her Arms and causes like that. I remember when I was going to shows in high school and early college, I didn't even know what PETA was, but because of bands like Anti-Flag and Midtown, actually, believe it or not, they had a lot of flyers and things showing me about animal brutality. I'm still a carnivore, but it made me feel a little bit guilty anyway. We've got Atreyu Rykin, who has his own management company, and he also writes for Alternative Press. He'll be on the following week. We've got Todd Koval, who is the only carny I know. He's always, always, always on the road, and he has quite an arsenal of artists in his management roster, including his wife. So I always feel like my wife is my manager, except she doesn't make any commission. She just complains. So it's a little bit different. So he manages his wife, and we have someone who causes a lot of stir and controversy on the internet, but he's a really nice guy and he's a hardworking guy. His name is Greg Long. He has his own management company and he also has his label called We Are Triumphant, which is part of the reason why you know and love Neck Deep, because he released their debut release and then eventually Hopeless picked them up and now Adobe plays them a lot. So that's just February, and March we've got a bunch of managers too. So thanks again for listening to the show every Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. We've got Nick Mishko on just after this commercial break. Thank you. Hello, thanks for listening to Waldman's Words. Today we have Nicholas Mishko from 10 and 8 Management. So do you mind being called Nick? Because I've called you both. I don't want to offend you.
Actually, believe it or not, I go by my last name. I have since I've been like 10 years old. Because I feel like there's a million Nicks in the music industry, so I have just everyone call me Mishko. So, but for this, Nick's fine.
Okay. I just don't want to offend you. The guy to my right goes by part of his last name, Fish. So everyone does this, and everyone calls me Waldman or Scott Waldman.
As long as you don't call me asshole, we're fine.
I mean, maybe in the middle of the call, if you say something messed up, I will. But as of now, you're doing all right. So, all right. Mishko, exactly. Introduce yourself. Tell the many, many listeners around the world, believe it or not, because when I was on my honeymoon, I tuned into Waldman's Words narcissistically from Vietnam. So there you go.
I would have done the same thing, except my wife would have killed me if I'd been on my honeymoon working. So, but yeah, I own 10 and 8 Management Agency. You know, we're a management firm. We manage some bands all around the world. I've been managing bands for, God, 5 years now. It seems like forever. Been in the music business going on about 10 years now. My first half of my I kind of like to say my career was in is in two halves. You know, my first half was like really learning, getting my chops, getting everything set up. And, you know,
well, we have an outline. We kind of have an outline to talk about your career, I guess, semi-chronologically, because obviously there are certain tangents that we're going to go on. But you're Nicholas or Nick or Mishko. You're based out of Ohio, correct?
Yes.
and you represent a band called Everyone Dies in Utah, another state.
Yes, they're my guys in Texas. Love them.
Okay. And they are a fellow peer because I represent a band called Mirror Eyes on In Vogue. And did they sign mid last year? I know they signed before Mirror Eyes did.
We signed – we put pen to paper, I would say, way, way early of last year. Okay. I got to look at the – you know, I know it's been like a year ago. And then we could – you know, and then we talked to Nick Moore and we got, you know, when we can finally announce and the logistics and whatnot. So we've been with In Vogue about a year.
Okay, cool. And when I was at So What Festival in Dallas in the fall, they actually headlined a show there. So that was pretty sweet.
Yes, yes.
That's awesome. And you also represent Alteris and a whole bunch of other bands. But how did we meet? I believe it was just through Facebook, but I'm not 100% certain.
I think, if my memory serves me correctly, I believe Nick Moore sent out, he labeled this band to the label. And I think I just responded to you, and I was just like, hey, you know, I manage, because I feel like a lot of managers don't work together as much as they should. And I think it was just an email, and then it led to Facebook convos, and then here we are.
No, I appreciate that. That was when I kind of felt like I quote unquote arrived as a manager, because it was the first band that got a record deal, and a lot of people were reaching out. But it was nice for someone to reach out, you know, that wasn't necessarily looking for something or looking for a favor. So, because Mirror Eyes and Everyone Dies in Utah, for example, they couldn't be any more different musically. So it was just nice just to have someone reach out that I guess has had some quote unquote success on the label. So, you know, you're from Ohio. I'd love to talk about growing up in Ohio. I lived in the Midwest for 4 years at the rival state, Michigan, in Ann Arbor. But how did your musical upbringing happen? Like, talk about that.
All right. So, you know, born and raised in Ohio. When I was about to graduate high school, I was like, you know, it's like real world here. Oh shit. Like, what should I do? And I knew I really liked music. I'm like, well, what can I do with music? You know, I'm not a musician by what it means. Like, is I know there's a business behind it. Like, what can I do? So I actually, there's a book called A&R by Bill Flanagan. I'm actually looking at it right now. It's on my shelf in the office. And that book actually, I kind of want to say, got me into the music business. It's about a, you know, old school music business, A&R guy chasing down bands. I was like, this is cool as hell. This is what I want to do.
Do you know what label he worked for? Do you know what
I beg your pardon?
Did he work for a specific label, Bill Flanagan? I've never heard of this book.
I believe he worked for Sony, and he did some time at Universal.
Okay.
So it's a really cool, it's old school, you know, music industry type book. You know, so I was like, well, I got to work at a record label. So I went through all my CDs. I looked at all the bands I love, and I reached out to every single record label, because the next thing to do was, okay, I need to get an internship.
Right.
So I looked at every CD that I had, labels out in LA, labels out in Nashville, New York. This is before Facebook days. You know, God, I sound so ancient saying that, but
I'm older than you. I get it. I believe you're in your early 30s. Technically, I'm in my mid 30s, so I get it. You know, some people.
Yeah, it's just networking. I don't want to say back in the networking before Facebook was email and phone call. Like I remember like doing interviews with Universal and Few by Ramen. Like, you know, they called you. And you know, there was no Facebook group.
You didn't even text
to network with people. You had to grind. So, you know, about 100 interviews later, I got my first internship at Rockridge Music over in New Jersey. So I moved my entire life to the East Coast.
How old were you? I was
20, 21 at the time. No, 21, 22. This was my senior year. So I went to college. This was my senior year of college. So I had to get an internship to graduate. So
I think that
never
should be
been
required
outside of
at
Ohio.
Schools. I think that should be required.
I beg your pardon?
I think that should be required at universities. It wasn't at mine. I think a lot of people truly underestimate how crucial an internship could be. There's so many artist managers that I speak with and other positions that hire in-house. And a lot of people expect, you know, I mean, me and you spoke about this, people who want to be assistants to managers, they expect to have like a salary right away. And it's just,
yeah,
it just boggles my mind. I mean, when I don't even have a livable management salary right now. And I know that that just happened to you.
The internship was at Rock Ridge Music, and just like every other, you know, record label internship, it was unpaid.
Right.
So I was like, oh shit, like, okay, I've got 3 semesters to save up for this, or 2 semesters. So I saved up, okay, what I know East Coast expensive, so I saved up, and then my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, we picked up, we moved out there, and I lived off our savings, and I did that first summer. I took that experience, and then I went back to the drawing board and grinded out, and I reached back out to every, you know, record label that I could, you know, every booking agent, every management company, and okay, I have some experience, and 300 interview, like, it was like, I think like 286 interviews and like resumes I sent out. It was a lot. I was trying to get in everywhere.
What did you do at Rock Ridge? I know Real Big Fish is currently on a subsidiary of Rock Ridge, but what did you do specifically?
So I was an intern there for the entire summer, and this is back when MySpace was just getting started. So we had to do, and it was a lot more forum promotion. Uh-huh. So we had to push bands' MySpace pages and send screenshots to clients, and, you know, a lot of picking up, you know, I remember having to call record stores. Hey, did you get our CDs? Is it playing? What do people think? You know, because I feel like, you know, I got in the music business right when that old school kind of grind mentality, where like you built I remember I was an intern, I was having relationships with record store owners, like, yep, in Texas and Iowa
when they existed,
you know. So you just, you know, that's what you had to do. There was no mass, there was no Facebook events, there was none of that shit, you know. Like, you had to, if you wanted to promote a band show, like, you had to call, like, who's running the fanzines out in the middle of nowhere in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just what you had to do. So that's what some of my duties were as far as, like, an intern at Rock Ridge.
So relations with stores and a lot of digital when MySpace was starting. It was a lot of learning as you go because MySpace was so new.
Yeah.
I remember MySpace. That actually helped catapult the band I was in, the City Drive, and it had a minor success. But I know back in the day when I was going to shows, labels were way more involved with sending out flyers or posters,
yeah,
to the shows, and they don't really do that as often as they used to anymore. So
I remember seeing a wall of just boxes and boxes. There were thousands of posters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, call this promoter. They need 15 posters. Send them out. You know, I
promo
would get
CDs.
Weekly, I have to go and get posters printed for the label.
Mm-hmm. Who were some artists on Rock Ridge at the time that you were working with?
Real Big Fish was cool. There was a guy named Ernie Halter. We did a lot of Sister Hazel stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Luca before he was on The Voice. So that was pretty cool when he blew up and he started doing things with Christina Aguilera.
Mm-hmm.
We did some things with Flaw, Chris Volz.
So it's a very diverse label. They have a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very diverse. So it was cool to see the different genres. So,
and then to my understanding, because when we talk, it sounds like you're really knowledgeable of ASCAP, BMI, and the publishing world. Then were you shifted over to another position, like a full-time career? Or
So after Rock Ridge, you know, I went back to the grind, and, you know, all those interviews and resumes I sent out that we talked about, I got an interview at APCO Music and Records in New York City.
Okay.
And that was a whole different, you know, major, you go from an indie to a major label. That was really, really eye-opening. Just the way they do business, lot more bigger clients. But yes, that's how I got very knowledgeable about ASCAP and BMI. I worked 5 years in their licensing and songwriter and artist royalties.
I don't know too much about ADCO. Can you talk about it?
So, all right. So, ABCO, it's ABKCO. ABCO was founded by Alan Klein, and he was the original managers of the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. So, it was just, you know, every day, you know, I'd go, you know, do my work, and I'd see, you know, the platinum and gold records of the Rolling Stones, like throughout the whole offices and the Grammys and whatnot. So it's a record label that they do a lot right now. Their focus is a lot of licensing and publishing. Like they did stuff for, I think their last big project, Westworld for HBO.
Oh,
you know, a lot of their bread and butter is, you know, the Who, Rolling Stones, a lot of the, you know, old school, you know, major acts.
Well, yeah, no, I know that Alan Klein, I think just after, well, just before the Beatles broke up and Brian Epstein, their manager, died, he became their manager. And I think that there was a lot of acrimony with that. But as he worked with the Rolling Stones for quite some time, correct?
Yes, yes. That's and then when I became, and then when I got in with the company, his son, Jody, great man. That company is very family oriented. Great people, but he was the head of the company when I came in.
Is Alan Klein still alive, or was he there?
He passed away a few years ago. I never got a chance to actually meet him, but the history and the good stories that people who were close to him would say it was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, he's definitely part of the rock and roll lexicon. So, did you live in New York City at the time? Because I know it's slightly more expensive than Jersey. Slightly.
Yeah, we ended up moving to the Bronx.
Oh,
so,
and nice.
Because, you know, that was the whole goal and the dream. Was like, okay, you know, I'm moving my way up, getting to the label, you know, finally working in Manhattan. I was like, you know, and I got engaged to my, you know, my wife at the time. And she, you know, we're like, all right, we got to move to New York. So we moved to the Bronx. And
a tough part or like the Riverdale part? Like the J-Lo part or like the gangster?
Not
part?
Riverdale. It was the neighborhood we did live in was called Country Club. So it wasn't like.
I've never been to Country Club Bronx. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's the name. It was a real nice Italian neighborhood. So if you take like the 4 or the 6 train all the way up to the top, I was the second to the last stop in the Bronx.
So it was safe like Bronx Tale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. I didn't really hang out in Bronx too much. I know that Brooklyn has gotten really cool recently, but when I was growing up,
Brooklyn's the new Manhattan, and
it's insane.
It seems like I beg your pardon?
It's insane because parts of Brooklyn, like Williamsburg, when I was growing up, was kind of an area that you avoided, and now Williamsburg is more expensive than parts of Manhattan. It's funny. My parents actually told me when I was going into the city in high school to avoid Times Square because at the time, Times Square was kind of ghetto-y and like where the prostitutes hung out. And then now it's like Disney.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually felt safer. And, you know, my whole family was from Midwest. And when we moved to New York City, I told them, I was like, you know, I feel safer in New York City than I do Jersey.
Probably.
So
that's funny. And how long did you live there?
So we lived there for a few years. We were on the West Coast for 5 years, you know.
Where?
A few years in Jersey, and then when we moved to the Bronx.
Where in the West Coast were you?
We didn't live in the – when we moved from the Midwest, we haven't moved to the West Coast. One day, hopefully, we can move to the West Coast.
Okay. But you were in New York City for a bit, and then were you just like, you know what, I think I could do this on my own? How was that transition? Because everyone has their own, I guess, breaking point, you know, or quarter life crisis.
Yes.
So
this was the, I guess, the full circle. So, you know, I worked at APCO for a few years. I mean, more than a few years, half a decade, and you know, great. It was a great salary job. I love the people working there, and I got in the music business to work with artists, you know, and a lot of songwriter artist royalties and public. That's all. It's a lot of it. It's spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. You don't really get to deal with the touring, and then you see your artists and whatnot. But so I started managing one artist, then I'm managing two artists, and the next thing you know, I'm pretty good at this. I got something going on here. So you know, so my wife Becky, you know, we discussed it, and we're like, well, let's move back to Ohio. You know, obviously cheaper living, and I'll pursue 10-8 management full time. And you know, we moved back, and then 5 years later, here I am on the phone with you.
Yeah, that's the sign that you made it when you're on Waldman's Words, let me tell you. That's basically like the equivalent of Best New Artist Grammy. So 10-8 Management, I spoke about this, I mean, briefly when I was just saying who you were. What does that mean?
Okay, so it's kind of it'd be better if we were face to face in person, but all right, so 10 and 8 is actually my shoe size. I was born with two different size feet. One's a size 10, one's a size 8. There's your 10 and 8 management. Yeah.
You were born with those large feet? Like as a
baby?
Oh,
yeah. Well, oh, yeah. No, I was, you know, when I was like, okay, I need to have a company name, I was trying to do like a play on words, like maybe Mish Co.
Right.
Or Nick's Management. I was just like, I looked at my shoes one day. I was like, you know, I've always wanted, you know, well, there's a 10, there's an 8, you know, I've always been, and that's a great icebreaker. And I just ran with it, and it stuck. So
ran with it, no pun intended.
Yeah.
So I, because I had no idea what it meant. It sounds like an unorthodox football call, but I had no idea what it meant.
A lot of people, they say, is that like something with steering, like where you keep your hands? I've gone to conferences, and like a year later, people I haven't seen or spoke to in a year, they're like, 10 and 8, oh my God, the feet. Like, show my friend, this is so cool that you're, you know. So it's like a great icebreaker, and it's just, I'm used to, you know, talking about it, and they're like, I don't believe you. I'm like, well, look down at my shoes. So,
well, that
yeah,
makes sense. I mean, that's a dramatically different size. I'm just right now, as you said, is it a steering thing? I was using my hands to try to steer, and that would be a really awkward way to steer a car, like with the 10 and the 8 o'clock time.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, that if I saw someone doing that in traffic, I would definitely smile or attempt to take a picture. The other day, I saw someone shaving in traffic, which is kind of wild, but I've never done that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not with a straight razor. Yeah. Not with this. That would be really silly. It was with an electric razor.
That'd be crazy with the whipped cream and straight razor. Yeah, that's
whipped
crazy.
Cream. It'd be even crazier if someone shaved with whipped cream. That would be really wild.
That'd be even weirder. That would, you know?
Yeah, I've never seen that, but I mean, that's one way to make it a little bit more of a delicious process. Zing. So anyway, we have another minute or so before we take our legal commercial break. But so you started this company named after your shoe size. Well, that's a tongue twister. And I guess when we get back, we'll talk about how it went into a full-time thing, because it's pretty amazing that you had a girlfriend and then eventual wife to support you. I mean, not necessarily financially, but support you emotionally through this, because it's not a guaranteed quote-unquote success. So
the big thing in music is your family and support and backbone. And I even tell bands that, like, your significant other or your family supporting you, that helps.
Yeah.
You know, because it's crazy when you tell someone you want to pursue you know, you might as well say, I'm going to go play for, you know, the Cubs, or, you know, the Indians, or, you know, or, you know, professional football team. Oh, you want to work in music? Okay, that's a phase you'll get out of. And then to be doing it, you know, 10 years later, it's, yeah, I'm really blessed.
You are extremely lucky, and I am very lucky to have you on the line right now. And we're going to take a short break and get right back to it. So stick around for Waldman's Words with Mishko of 10 and 8 Management.
Fantastic.
Hello, we are back with Waldman's Words with Mr. Nicholas Mishko of 10 and 8 Management, who's been talking about his pedigree growing up in Ohio, moving to the J-Lo Bronx, working for two separate companies, and then starting his own. So now let's get back into 10 and 8 Shoe Size Management. How did it become a full-time thing? Because I'm still trying really hard to make Walden Management its own full-time. I mean, I work more than full-time hours, but it's not my main source of income right now.
In the beginning, it was tough, you know, because I went from that, you know, salary, you know, major label job. I even had a pension, you know, 401k. Wow. Yeah, especially a major record label to still do that. It was tough. A lot of grinding in the very beginning. I still grind, but in the very beginning, just to get over that hump, just to be able. I just now got offices. I was working for home for a few years because it's just, I was always on the road traveling. You know, if I had to go back to New York, you know, to do a label deal or go on tour with one of my bands, and then, you know, I'm a family man now. I just had my wife and I, we just had our first son, you know, a couple months ago.
Congratulations.
So my home office has been commandeered into the baby room. So now, you know, I have an office now. And plus it's nice to be able to have clients come visit me at the office and have my interns come to the office now. So, but, yeah, it was really tough in the beginning.
I can only imagine. I mean, now you have another mouth to feed, literally, and I've seen some pictures of this future CEO. So,
he's the next Jimmy Iovine.
That's amazing. I mean, he already knows what he wants to do at such a young age. That's amazing. And now you're working full time. Talk about your clients, because I mentioned Alteris and Everyone Dies in Utah, but I guess kind of feature them for a bit. This is definitely a good framework for that.
Fantastic. So, I manage, you know, 7 clients. I don't know how bands self-manage themselves. I work, you know, so I go to the office like around 9:30, 10. I stay until about 6:30, 7 o'clock at night, and I go home and I'm still answering emails until 1 or 2 in the morning.
And texts. And trust me, don't forget the texts. Incessant. Oh, text.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, the text, the messenger, everything, the phone calls. And it's just, I tell my artists, you know, like, I don't know how, like, musicians, when they get to that point, like, they do it themselves, because it's like the music business is 20, it never sleeps. So, but anyways, you know, my roster, I've been with some of them for a few years now, and, you know, they're like family. You know, we're always expanding our roster, but, you know, I manage 7. We just took on the Monarch Agency. We just absorbed them. So Alex McGinnis, shout out to Alex. He's a great guy, great manager. But the Monarch Agency and their roster is now under 10-8 management. So we've grown from 7 to about, we're going to have about 15 artists, and then I'm taking a few more artists myself. So
I saw that. I mean,
pretty good first quarter.
No, that's amazing. Actually, if you looked at my outline, it's number 4 was full time dash recently, and then number 5 was merged with Monarch. So I haven't met, or quote unquote, well, I haven't really met you, not in person, but we've spoken on the phone a few times, Alex. So to my understanding, Monarch is, I mean, it's a lot of really heavy acts. Is that the case?
Yeah, and well, you know, he had a couple of country artists on his roster as well too. I'm a firm believer in don't be pigeonholed into a certain genre. If you if you believe in the music, you can sell it. It's yes, certain different genres, you got to approach people differently, but in the end, you know, it's, you're selling music. You know, you're selling the art. You know, the product. Mm-hmm. And you know, I never wanted to be that one guy that works with straight metal bands or, you know, country artists. If I like the, you know, first you got to be a fan, and if I love the music and I feel like we can do something and the band wants to work hard, that's why, you know, roster 10 and 8 management, we're very, you know, very diverse roster.
Well, that's what I said to myself when I started this company, Walden Management, is that I didn't want to be the pop punk manager or, you know, the Coachella cool indie manager. I wanted to just represent bands that I love. And then when people check out my roster, they're always like, wow, that's really cool and diverse. I'm like, exactly. Because I don't know, like, let's just say I was the pop punk manager and I tried to do hip hop, I wouldn't be taken as seriously.
Exactly.
So,
and look at all the genres that are crossing over now for every, you know,
especially so, country. I mean, exactly. when I hear Taylor Swift, and then when I hear her old stuff, it's like, Taylor Swift might as well have some songs that sound like Rihanna. It's kind of crazy how she's crossed over. So
I agree with you. And plus, it's nice to just to have that change up, dealing with the different types of promoters, dealing with like a country music festival buyer, and then having to deal with a metal talent buyer. It's just it's cool to deal with all these different types of people in the music business. Plus, it helps to always get your name out there amongst the whole industry.
Yep. I agree. And so I guess, do any acts this year have any big things happening? I mean, you could even talk about the Monarch acts, but Everyone Dies in Utah, I believe they released a full length last year. I know that. But anyone else, do you have any big plans for your 10 and 8 artists?
We got a couple of Butch Parnell's an artist I keep an eye on. He's my folk country singer. He's actually been one of the artists I've been working with the longest. Got a couple of pretty big labels keeping their eye on him. he's done a lot of great showcases for the Counting Crows.
He gets a lot of love.
Beg your pardon?
He's open for the Counting Crows, or like what?
The Counting Crows, they do the CMJ and South by Southwest showcases every year.
Oh, cool.
He's played those a lot.
Oh, wow.
So it's pretty cool. He's got a lot going for him. Altairis, you know, God, they've got 50 dates booked. I got a couple of really cool, you know, Europe tours going on for everyone guys in Utah. Morning Maze, my pop punk band. We just had them in the alt press offices last week.
Yeah, I saw
that
the was pictures. Really kicking. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. It was just fun to be able to have them up there. That should be out in a couple weeks.
They're going to be in the print magazine? They're going to have...
They're going to be on the site because we filmed them doing a couple of songs. They got a really cool studio in the alt press offices. So they did a couple of songs, and it's going to be on the site and all the social media. And then... that's really cool. Keys and Corridors, they're a new band we just signed on the roster. We got a couple of really cool tour leads for them. Young Medicine, great band. They're another great band on a roster. They're out of Kansas. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, my roster, they're all over the country. And, yep. And you know, at first, you know, I probably get 50 to 100 demos a week. And,
wow.
You know,
that's way more than
there's
I
a
get.
Lot. There's,
that's
you know,
a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, our Twitter and our Instagram, you know, we're really big on, you know, pushing the bands and whatnot. But every once in a while, you'll see, like, I'll post on Facebook and on Twitter, you know, on the 10A management pages, hey, send us demos. And then next thing you know, we'll get, like, 30 demos in, like, 3 minutes. And I'm just like, holy shit. So they'll go into a folder when I get time.
Well, it's nice to get interest. I mean, that's really flattering. Just quickly back to the Counting Crows, because I've been thinking about this the whole time. The singer of the Counting Crows dated both Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox of Friends. All right, back to this. So you get 30 as soon as you post something, and then you get 50 to 100 a week. Wow. Has that ever turned into you taking on a client, like the blind solicitation? Has that ever worked?
Yeah, I've actually – so – well, a lot of, you know, last couple of bands, it's been labels reaching out, sending demos. When I used to manage the things they carried, you know, before they disbanded, they actually reached out to me. Young Medicine reached out to me as well, too. So, yeah, sometimes you find some diamonds in the rough.
Yep.
I find a lot of times, I'm a firm believer in follow-up is in the key to the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of time, there's a couple bands on my roster, they've, you know, I just didn't have time to listen to their demo, but they kept following up and following up and following up. And I'm like, all right, let me check them out. I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. Like,
right.
You know, so, because you know how it is as a manager yourself. If we had a dollar for every time someone told us no, we'd be billionaires.
Oh, I wouldn't have to do anything.
I know.
Or a dollar, or how about 50 cents for every time someone didn't respond?
I know. I would be picking you up in the 10-8 management helicopter, and we'd be doing this interview in Vegas, you know, face-to-face.
Totally down.
So,
now I think Vegas has the Taco Bell with alcohol now. Is that correct?
Oh, I believe so. So, yeah, it's just you got to follow up, and sometimes it takes 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 times, and, you know, you don't take no for an answer. You have to grind. That's what this – just like any other business.
Yep.
If you want it, go after it and do it.
Well, we're doing it right now. And speaking of doing it, that's what led to your child. So talk about – sick transition, bro. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, having a marriage and a new – how old is your son?
So he's about to turn 2 months
here
in a couple. Yes. Yes.
He's
and I've already got my bands arguing on who's going to teach him, you know, keyboard or drums or guitar or screaming lessons.
Screaming lessons, wow. I actually teach guitar, and my honest, sincere recommendation is not to even give it a go until you're like 6 years old, just because
okay. That's
my sincere – I mean, piano you could definitely learn earlier, but you don't really get calluses playing a piano. Screaming lessons, I feel like you could teach a child how to scream – 1 day old. So you could find someone
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, he's got a set of lungs on him.
I bet he does. But talk about that because, you know, I, as a manager who's married, my priorities are different from when I was living by myself and not in a relationship with someone else. And I can only imagine they exponentially increase when you have a mouth to feed. So let's talk about that.
Well, not to mention the touring days, I don't want to say they're over, but you don't go on the road with the bands as much. You know, my wife's always been, you know, my wife Rebecca, she's always been supportive of my career since day one. You know, I was that crazy boy that wanted to work in the music business, and she's supported me ever since, and she still does. And a lot of our bands, you know, we've had them over our house. They're like family. You know, she cooks for them and whatnot. But, you know, now that we have little baby Owen in the picture, yeah, it's definitely the pressure's on more than ever. You know, I joke with my bands. You know, I even joke with some other agents, like, come on, throw me that tour. You know, I have a college, you know, I got to pay for someone's college here now.
Yep. So, well, that's not even a joke. I mean, you really
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I know. So it's, yeah, it's definitely more pressure, but I've always been the type to, I work really well under pressure. So I guess, you know, I'm really curious and excited to how the next 5 years are going to play. And just seeing him grow up and my artists grow and, you know, as the bands get bigger, you know, seeing him, you know, just see how his life plays out with, you know, with music as well, too.
Well, you know, if you were living as a married couple in New York City, you'd have way more financial pressures than you do in Ohio, I imagine.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
I don't know how they do it. I don't know how people can afford to have children and live in an apartment in New York City and, in addition, send your kid to some hoity-toity private school that probably costs more than my college. But I digress.
Yeah, I'm on top of student loans and in bills and
– Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, L.A. is an expensive city because people always tell me that. I have a friend who just moved to a suburb of Kansas City, and he told me that the apartment that he's looking at with his girlfriend – has a gym, is connected to a golf course, and has all these amenities, and costs less for a two-bedroom apartment than I pay for my one bedroom. And, you know, it's wild.
Oh, my goodness.
It's pretty wild. But so we have a little bit of time left. So, you know, marriage and kid, let's talk about your full-time successes, because you are a full-time manager. You do not have another job. I guess – if there's anyone listening that wants to do what you do, I guess if you have any advice for them.
What I would tell them is, you know, always stay humble. You know, check, you know, this is a business, and with social media today, carry yourself very professionally. Yes, I joke with my bands and whatnot, and you know, I like to have a good time as well.
I tell dad jokes. That's about as controversial I get. No, I never complain on social media. Never.
Yeah, I would tell them. You know, there's a lot of it's different when I started the music business. There was no Facebook. Now, you know, be very careful when you rant on Facebook. You never know. Everyone seems like everyone's on a witch hunt nowadays, or someone. You know, you kind of build this reputation for yourself with people you haven't even met yet, you know, but they'll see your crazy Facebook posts. You know, a lot of people don't like seeing that whole, you know, I try to keep my posts, mainly my dog, my son, or, you know, my bands, but like that whole me, oh, this is how long I've done, or people really don't care. They care about music and bands and
complaining,
you know,
about exes, complaining about coworkers, like,
yeah,
like that.
Even politics. You know, I would tell someone, you know, treat this just like you would any other business. Stay professional. You know, try not to rant about politics, because you never know. Music business is so small. It is unbelievably, it's everyone knows everyone, and everyone has an opinion on everyone. But with that being said, you're gonna have people tell you no. You're gonna have people say that your bands are not good enough.
So have
you're
a
gonna
thick
have people.
Skin.
I beg your pardon?
I said, so have thick skin.
Yes, develop very thick skin. And just because someone tells you no, or a record label says no, I've had labels tell me no, and then 6 months later, after the band got a little bit bigger, they're like, yeah, let's bring them in for a showcase. Keep grinding, and you just, it's sooner or later, it will work out. You just have to stick with it. It's just tough business. It's a very tough business. You can't get defeat. You can't feel defeated.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, and a lot of times you gotta, you know, you can't let. And here's another tip I would give someone: you can't let other people's successes. You can be happy for other people, but don't compare your career to other people. If someone's killing it with their bands, or you know, if this label's killing it, or this promoter's doing huge, you know, don't, you know, use that as fuel to drive yourself. Don't get jealous. You know, just keep pushing yourself.
I always tell that to bands that I'm working with that are like, oh, they got this tour, they got this tour. And it's like, good for them.
Yeah, because a lot of the music business, just like any other business, there's politics involved. And sometimes a promoter is best friends with this manager. And yes, their band might be 10 times smaller than your client or this other record. But, like, you never know the back end politics.
Nope.
And
you don't even know if they paid for that slot. You really
You just you never know. Or even with, you know, a lot of times bands will rant about certain companies, and I tell bands all the time, even bands I don't manage, I tell, don't do that. It will bite you in the ass.
Oh no, no, yeah, you'll burn a bridge that way.
Yeah,
I mean, I slightly disagree with what you said about politics, but I mean, people are entitled to their opinion. Because sometimes for an artist, they have to get there, or even a manager. But everything else you're saying about, you know, for example, if Adobe was a promotion company based in Ohio and putting on shows, there's going to be a lot of backlash no matter what. And if people say negative things about that, then Adobe's not going to want to work with your band. It's just plain and simple.
So, it's stay humble and grind hard. That's how, and develop
always.
Thick skin.
Always,
and don't be afraid to say hello to people, because you never know when an opportunity arises. Look at this interview now.
And
simple hello turns into great working relationship.
And don't overshare. Like, don't constantly build up something that doesn't need to be built up. Just release it. So we're almost done. If you have any public stories from your many, many years, I mean, you said 10 years in this industry. That's an eternity. 10 years, it's kind of like dog years. You multiply it by 7. So if you have any stories that you think you could leave us with, great.
Oh, I'm trying to think. What is some juicy... I'm trying to think what I can say without getting me
in
trouble.
You don't have to. You do not need to name any specific names for that.
I've been to some interesting conferences. I'll say that.
Interesting is a word I use to describe an ugly painting.
I'm trying to think.
You don't have to say any salacious details. I mean, I've actually spoken at some conferences. Was it more of some acrimony with artists or kind of drug scandal, or what was it? You don't have to be too specific.
How about this? I'm going to use what we just talked about in advice and, like, events.
Okay.
So everyone knows everyone in the music business. And if you hear something scandalous or something, just keep your mouth shut. I will say that.
Okay.
Loose lips. That's the best I could say there.
Okay.
So, because everyone always has dirt on each other, and or you'll hear something about this label or that agent or that promoter or this fest, you know, it's so just, you know, keep your eyes open, your ears open, mouth shut, and just keep grinding. I'll leave you at that.
Some people are definitely dirtier than others in certain regards. And of course, right now with the days of the internet, you know, you're guilty before you're innocent. So just be smart. I mean, that's just good advice in general. Just be smart, keep your head down, and sometimes keep your mouth shut. Kind of like this mob mentality. Well, Mishko, as I'm calling you now on this, thank you
Fantastic.
Very much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm sure we will talk soon. I definitely would like to meet Alex, so we'll figure out a time for that privately. And just, I guess, give your socials to those listening, and we'll call it a day.
Fantastic. So 1008management.com, Instagram.com/1008management. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Check us out. Love our bands. Like our photos. Follow us. Yeah. Well, one email at a time, trying to take over the world.
Well, I appreciate your time and stick
thank
around.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, dude, it's my pleasure. I said in the beginning, and I've been saying, like, this is my second interview this calendar year since I got back from my honeymoon, and I've been really trying to focus on as many behind the scenes people as possible so that this could be informative and educational. So you definitely helped with both of those, and just have a great day, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Thanks a lot.